You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And of course, being the second second Wednesday of the month, it's Hutchinson Legal coming along to answer all your legal questions. And we have Ilaria George with us this afternoon. Welcome, Ilaria.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you along. And I'm just having a little bit of trouble with it. That might be better. Ilaria, when Hutchinson Legal we were talking to them last month, we always like to give them a question to take away. And one was, we don't want to talk about the rights or the moral issue about states of emergency and all that. Should it be in, should it not, or anything like that. We just wanted to know, first of all, what are the conditions that is any state can declare a state of emergency, and what that means, whether it triggers automatically things or what? If you could just tell us that, please.
Well, a state of emergency is not necessarily triggered automatically. A state of emergency is only triggered when the welfare or safety of the public is at risk. So, for example, not every year during the bushfires, a state emergency is declared. However, this year it was, because the bushfires were rampant. It was in large scales and people's livelihoods and homes were going to be affected. So this year, a national emergency was declared in January to allow the government to intervene and hold, for example, evacuations of towns, people who are within the bushfire zone. And again, it was declared in March due to COVID-19. But that's because COVID-19 was a widespread pandemic that actually affected the welfare and safety of the public in general. So it needs to be pretty extreme to allow the states to actually put in an emergency management or declare a state of emergency just so that they can take control and assist people and make sure that the public is safe.
Does it have to be a national, a natural disaster, or could something else?
It could be, for example, where there's mass rioting in America. If that were the case in Victoria, the government can intervene and hold a state and declare a state of emergency because the safety of the public is at risk. And like we see with COVID-19, it's not a natural disaster, it's a disease, but the government has taken steps and put in restrictions to ensure that the virus doesn't actually spread to the mass population like it has in other countries, especially in New York and Brazil.
So it's now declared, we know why it can be declared. What does that automatically do? Or does it give the government extra powers, or are there things that it automatically does?
Well, what it automatically does is that it will give certain groups powers. So, for example, the chief health officer has the power to put in place restrictions and to put in place penalties to enforce those restrictions upon the public. So, for example, social distancing rules, you know, staying away 1.5 metres from other groups, making sure that the vulnerable stay at home. So I know at one point, you know, people over 70 have to stay at home due to the risk of COVID-19 to their health. They've banned gatherings in homes. They've banned gatherings out in public, so a lot of the businesses had to close as a result, and we're just coming out of this restriction. So it gives them the power to impose any rule that they think is reasonable to prevent the spread of the virus itself, or to prevent the risk of the disaster occurring.
Sounds like there's someone blowing the horn behind you. Just one other quick question, if I can, and then I'd like to move on. They declare it for only 30 days at a time. Is that right?
They can, yeah. So it's 30 days at a time, and then they can extend it.
So is there a limit as to how many times they extend it?
Not necessarily. So this is the third time it's been extended now. It's extended until the 21st of June, and then they will potentially do another risk assessment to see whether we can have our restrictions eased like they do in New Zealand now, or whether a state of emergency needs to be extended until such time that the virus is under control.
So is there any limit? Forgetting about Victoria, could it be declared sort of month on month off for years, or is there a limit? You can only have three or four.
I don't believe that it can be put on for years. Putting it on for years is a bit extreme, but I believe it can be put on for as long as the pandemic is going. So if they take off the restrictions now and we have a second wave of the COVID-19 virus, then it can come back.
Right. Now, we're very keen to talk to you about other matters because you are a criminal lawyer. And
I am.
One of the things that I've been seeing ads on TV, and there is evidence that with people being locked up so much that there is quite a bit of family violence, because you're putting together partners that sometimes don't get along all that well, but you know, they've got some sort of... I don't know, but they're able to get along, and all of a sudden you lock them up for 24 hours. And I believe there's been a real spike in family violence. Is that true?
There has been a spike. It's been reported by the government that there has been a spike, and that's actually why they've put out the new advertisement during COVID-19 to say that even though you're locked up, it's no excuse for perpetrators of family violence to commit such acts against their victims. Now, family violence is not of itself, depending on what you're doing, a crime. So if it's a threat or a physical or sexual assault, it is a crime. If it's, say, for example, verbal abuse, it's family violence. Yeah. So usually the way to resolve that is to get an intervention order. And I would probably suggest that prior to getting an intervention order, that services be contacted so that supports can be put in place, legal advice be obtained. And, you know, but if there is, that's like notwithstanding that, if there is imminent risk and the person feels that their safety is at risk, then they should apply for an intervention order straight away.
All right. Sorry, no, I didn't mean to cut across you. But I just want to explore this a bit more. So we could have some. It could be men, but it's more often women, I must say. But it can be men who are at this moment feeling very threatened, and believe that there is family violence occurring. Can you just very quickly take us through the steps? Like you say, you've got to get an order and all that. But you know what you've got to do. Could you just tell the listeners what each step they'd have to take place?
Well, what step they would probably have to take, you know, obviously they've assessed their situation. The first step is to potentially also contact a men's referral service to have a chat with them, or Lifeline to have a chat with them about what's happening. Then the next step is to contact the courts, go in, make an appointment and go in, write up the application. They would have to potentially swear the application in front of a registrar, and then they go before a magistrate. The courts usually assess the risks that are put in place before granting any sort of order that needs to be granted. And this, like the disclaimer said originally, this is on an individual case-by-case basis, right? So I would potentially perhaps seek some counselling as well. Usually assists people who seek counselling to know what kind of route they should take and what kind of actions should be put in prior to perhaps, say, jumping the gun,
And I guess if someone's really feeling threatened, the first is Triple O, isn't it? And get the police there.
That's correct. Yeah. So if someone's really, really threatened by the perpetrator's actions, or they feel that they are physically threatened, especially, then they should be calling the police. You know, violence is not acceptable either towards men or women. And, you know, safety is of the utmost concern, especially where, like you said, we're all locked down. We were all locked down together. Especially if you're working from home, you know, people's pet peeves tend to come out.
And of course, going back years and years ago, people didn't ring the police because the police weren't very interested. But I know now that with the police department, it is their top priority. If they get a family violence call, they drop most things and go.
Well, that's correct. But I think it's more because back then, people weren't necessarily educated in relation to family violence. Culturally, it may have been acceptable in some cultures for men to be dominating of women. But now, due to, you know, the deaths that are occurring, the assaults that are happening against women, family violence has become the forefront of public attention. It's something that now the governments are trying to implement and educate people that these sort of behaviours are not acceptable.
Ilaria, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Baby, do you understand me now? Sometimes I feel a little mad. But don't you know that no one alive can always be an angel? When things go wrong, I seem to be bad. Baby, sometimes I'm so carefree with a joy that's hard to hide. And sometimes it seems that all I have to do is worry, and then you're bound to see my other side. If I seem edgy, I want you to know that I never mean to take it out on you. Life has its problems and I get my share, and that's one thing I never mean to do, 'cause I love you. Oh, 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 baby, don't you know I'm human? I have thoughts like any other one. Sometimes I find myself alone, regretting some foolish thing, some little sinful thing I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Yes, I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 27 minutes past 12, and it's popped up a degree to 15. It was 15 when it caught the 12 and then jumped back to 14. Anyway, look, we have our legal people with us today from Hutchinson Legal, Ilaria. Look, if you do have any questions on crime, particularly Ilaria is a criminal lawyer, we can't talk about a particular case, but if there's any particular part of the criminal law, give us a ring now on 59 615 991. 59 615 991. Can't actually put you to air, but Greg's out there. Greg would be only too happy to bring the question in and we'll get Alara to answer for it. And if she hasn't got an answer, we'll get it for you by next time. Welcome back, Alara. And you'd like to talk a little bit about the crime stats and what you think about the crime in the future.
Well, crime stats, quite surprisingly, crime has decreased during COVID-19 restrictions.
They're not allowed out.
Yeah. But, well, honestly, it kind of doesn't, like, really stop them. I mean, I know of a few incidences around my neighbourhood where people are entering cars to find some valuables. And interestingly, actually occurred outside my own house on one night. I was up late and I can hear people rummaging through one of the cars at our house. Thankfully, my father actually has the sense not to leave any valuables in your car. So, you know, it's a good reminder to the community, don't leave your cars unlocked and if you do leave your cars unlocked, please don't leave anything valuable inside because it will definitely get pinched.
Good point.
But yeah, but with the COVID-19 in place and with us, you know, a lot of people have lost their jobs. It's going to be quite difficult to recover from this pandemic. Which we might then see a rise in crimes that are financially motivated. That could be like thefts, violent crimes, you know, disputes between people financially. I mean, I've just read a report today in relation to the previous North Melbourne coach that was remanded I think about last month or something like that. And the police are now investigating how, you know, officers can take photos of an individual in their custody and spread it around. But, you know, the motivation that was released today to the public was that this individual was having a financial dispute with another individual. So these things do occur, and you know, before entering into a financial agreement, make sure you get legal advice, make sure you know what you're entering into, and make sure you are able to pay back that individual, you know, or at least have a contract in place so that if you're lending someone money, so that it can be enforced. But the other thing that's on the rise is petty theft, so thefts from shopping centers, especially where they have self-serve machines. So there's not really a person watching the people stealing items anymore. And having a just knowing about people stealing food, well, the question is, why are these people stealing food? Is it because they can't afford it? Is it for some other reason? And I think as a community, there should potentially be a response in terms of, well, if people are losing their jobs, why not make food a lot cheaper? They're actually becoming a lot more expensive.
Or, there's also a lot of groups, such as the Salvation Army, and there's a number of organisations around, though, that if the people go there, rather than go off and run the risk of getting caught stealing, there's a lot of money at the moment being poured into that sector too, isn't there?
That's correct. And, you know, rather than like risking a fine or risking going to court or, you know, even risking being put into police custody, perhaps reach out to these organisations and seek their assistance, which is, of course, the better route than just, you know, going to the shopping centre, trying to conceal something in your bag, hoping that you won't get caught. The deal is that they've got cameras all over the shopping centres now. They've got cameras in stores. I mean, like, the chances of getting caught are very, very high these days.
And I saw a case, I'm sure it did, that someone had shoplifted from a store and they were being chased, and so they were running across the road. Now, they didn't look right and the left because they didn't want to get caught, and that could have they only needed a car to be a few centimetres closer and that person would have been killed.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. you know, doing the wrong thing, people tend to be set in a certain mindset, or they tend to behave in a way where they're fearful of getting caught. Well, rather than putting yourself in a position, why don't you seek out support so that you don't have to risk your reputation only, but your own safety, especially if you're running off from the police or running off from someone.
Who wants to wind up in jail?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, exactly. And look, I firmly believe that no one gets away with crime. It eventually catches up and the consequences can be quite dire. But, you know, the other interesting thing is when the pandemic first started, the assaults surrounding tissues. Don't really know what difference tissues make, but it brought out a behaviour which led to a lot of videos on YouTube and memes of assaults taking place over tissues. Mm. And, you know, no doubt that these people would be charged because, I mean, the evidence of the assault is there. Mm. You know, one person grabbing, like, two rolls of tissue or two of those packets of tissues, not wanting to share it, and other people getting really angry about it.
Alaria, could I just ask a question? I don't want to cut across you, but you've just brought up an interesting point talking about Facebook. All right, somebody takes that video. They don't necessarily give it to the police to start with. They put it up on video on Facebook. Where does the person who's taken that video stand if the person turned out that was either grabbing the tissues or I mean, you've got to be careful putting stuff on Facebook, don't you, or am I wrong?
Look, I think you always need to be careful putting stuff on Facebook. Some people, unfortunately, don't really think about what they're putting on Facebook. And for law enforcement purposes, it can be used against them, most definitely. And, like, you know, evidence is digging up from Facebook itself. So I would always say, you know, if you're the person who's just a bystander, you're having a look at like a crime happening and you've posted it on video, you know, you shouldn't be posting this sort of stuff on Facebook. This should be given to the police as like for them to use as evidence. But even in terms of self-preservation and self-protection, you shouldn't be putting stuff on social media. Social media has its good... it's got some good things about it, like it allows for connection, it allows for information to be obtained and knowledge, but it doesn't necessarily help if you're putting stuff on Facebook that will result in consequences which are dire to yourself, you know?
And you don't know what the person who you're filming, like you don't know what their mindset is either, do you?
Well, that's correct. I mean, you know, the film about with the police officers dying, that is disgusting. In the sense, the person, the perpetrator who filmed it and is now in custody, that sort of behaviour, that sort of evidence will definitely be used against him, even if he chooses to enter a plea. Because, like, courts not only look at the crime and the result, but they also look at what occurred during the commission of the crime, okay? Mm-hmm. How did you go about it? Whether you were remorseful for what had occurred. So, for example, if someone punched another person or was assaulting another person and they were filming it and laughing about it, well, the courts are going to consider a much more harsher consequence because it just shows that they have no care or remorse for the other human being.
For what they did, yeah.
For what they did, yeah, that's correct. So it's not just, oh, yeah, he punched the person. Yeah, he's entering a plea of guilty. What had occurred during that? You know, how did this person behave? How did this person respond to the commission of the offending? You know, some people, if they're being sued for a commission of crime, tend to settle. That tends to go in their benefit. Others, you know, would write a letter of apology. it really depends. Of course, it's all individual, like on an individual basis, but it, like behavior during the crime and behavior after it, and even behavior before it, that's all looked at. It's not just, yeah, here's the crime, okay, here's your punishment.
All right, so the courts would take what led up to it and during it and the end of it.
Yeah, so for example, those poor police officers that died on the Eastern Freeway, yep. Well, the story that's known to the public is, you know, they stopped this person to do a random drug test.
Yep.
Oh, well, they stopped him to do a drug test. He was speeding. You know, they wanted to impound his car, and then a truck came and drove into them, right? But instead of the person whom they originally stopped, instead of them helping the police officers, they took a video of them, you know, telling them disgusting, awful things, which I won't repeat out of respect. That's looked at. That's during the commission of the offence of the crime. That in itself is looked at, you know. I mean, I know that the public perception is that sometimes courts are not harsh enough. Well, no, they are. But it depends on the individual circumstances. So an individual can do some horrible things, but try and repair the damage as much as they could. It doesn't mean that they can escape the punishment, but it means that the courts can take a more lenient approach to punishing that individual than a person who said, like, who has no remorse or no regret and did a horrible thing.
Fair enough. All right, Ilario, I've got to take a quick break. And we'll be back with more on Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 20 minutes to 1 o'clock and 15 degrees.
Sometimes it gets on London.
This is Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 15 minutes to 1 and 15 degrees. And I should mention that was Grant, who's the head of Hutchinson Legal, obviously. And look, we're fast running out of time this afternoon, but there will be someone back from Hutchinson Legal on the second Wednesday of, it'll be July by then. So if you've got any questions just of a general nature, you can either email us at info@yarravalleyfm.org.au, that's info@yarravalleyfm.org.au, or while we're here this afternoon, you give us a ring on 59615991. 59615991, or you can go on our Facebook page and put the question, and whoever comes in from Hutchinson Legal next month will certainly get you some answers. But we've got Ilaria with us, and she's a criminal lawyer. So we have had a couple of questions on bail over the last little while. I'll tell you what I think, or what's been told to me, and you're the expert. There used to be a penalty for breaking bail. Once you broke bail, you went straight back inside, or your bail was revoked, I should say, and you were dealt with. And also, breaking bail was an offence. Now, they did away with that. But the question that's been asked of me two or three times is, how can people, like, you'll hear somebody get bail again, and the other day was the fourth time. They were already on bail for three times. They'd broken it three times, and they were still given number four. Could you just tell us how that happens, please?
Well, they actually haven't done away with bail offences. So if you're committing an offence whilst on bail, you're still charged with it. It's attached to the main offence, yeah?
Yeah.
So a person can be released on bail, say, for example, on a reckless cause injury charge, yeah, with a couple of charges attached to it. Then they go and commit a petty theft, right? So they take that into account, have a look at it. They may or may not be bailed again, okay? It depends on the police, really. They're the ones who decide whether the person will get bail or not.
But very often they oppose bail, and then they're still given bail.
Well, that will be dependent on the bail justice or the court, okay? So in terms of bail, the bail laws, as everyone knows, has changed in about 2018. It's gotten a lot more stricter. So because of the changes to the bail laws, the percentage of people on remand awaiting trial or awaiting a hearing is much larger than it used to be. Okay, so there's about three categories of bails. You've got your exceptional circumstances, which is for your murderers, you know, the really bad offenders in like the police and, you know, the government's views that are risky to society. So they need to prove that they have exceptional circumstances in order to be given bail. It's on the offender to prove.
Do you know what sort of exceptions that would be? Like what would it have to be, do you know?
Yeah, well, look, I do, but it's all individual based, okay? So this criteria that the courts use to assess exceptional circumstances is the same criteria that is used to assess something called compelling reason. So compelling reason is the next category whereby, you know, if an offender commits certain offences and is remanded, they will have to show the court something that will compel them, something that means that there's a really good reason for the court to give them bail, yeah?
Yep.
And then there's the last category, which is unacceptable risk. Now, the circumstances that the courts consider is obviously circumstances personal to the offender, their mental health, their age, their family relationships, their housing, their work commitments, whether there's any sort of services in place to assist them, any sort of rehabilitation center that will take them on. You know, if it's their first time offending, and then they consider the prosecution's evidence. Now, the prosecution's evidence is usually taken at its highest, but it can be tested in terms of a bail application. So sometimes people are remanded, but the police just don't have enough evidence to prove that they've committed an offence. So that's all taken into account. And then what is taken also into account is their criminal history, how many offences have they committed whilst they're on bail as well. So the changes that have been made is, you know, there's always this view that once you're on bail, okay, you can get bail again. Well, they've made changes to that. So if, let's say, for example, you commit an offence of, like, drug trafficking but in low quantities, you know, that's more of a compelling. So it's a drug offence, it's a compelling reasons, or, you know, you've breached the family violence intervention order, that's compelling reason, right? So you've got to prove the second category to get bail, okay?
Right.
So if you got bail and then you go and commit another offence, then you're going to have, the next time you go before the court, you have to prove exceptional circumstances. So I've seen this where, you know, someone's been charged with drug trafficking, very, like, it's not trafficking in terms of drugs that needs to go to the county court or the Supreme Court. It's just minor drug trafficking. And they were remanded on compelling reason, but then they were released on bail, committed further offending of the same nature, and were remanded again. They will have to show the court what sort of exceptional circumstances. So what circumstances do they have that's out of the ordinary to justify the courts giving them bail, okay? So that's the first thing they need to prove. The second thing they need to prove is that they're not a risk to the community, so that they're an acceptable risk to the community. So say, for example, if this person had reporting conditions on their original bail condition and they haven't reported, well, the courts are most likely not going to release them the next time, because that just shows that they have not followed their bail conditions and that they are most likely going to be a risk to the community. And the other thing that they also consider is obviously the victim. You know, if it's an assault case, on first basis, like, is this person a risk to the victim? Is there an intervention order in place? And how many times has it been breached? So it's not, bail's not as simple as you get bail because, you know, it's your first time, and you're released back into the community, you do something else, you go back in, you get bail again. It's not like that.
Well, I've got to say, from people who read the paper, that's just exactly how it sounds, isn't it?
Look, I would not trust the papers, to be honest. I definitely would not. Sometimes the media tends to exaggerate a lot of these things more than it actually is. A lot of people are getting locked up. You know, the police are doing their jobs. And, you know, I've had a client once, like, remanded on exceptional circumstances for petty theft. That was it, you know. True. And the magistrate themselves couldn't even believe it, that they were locked up just for petty theft. They kept asking the police officer, is there anything else? And the police officer's like, no. And he's like, well, like, I'm just going to release him. Like, you know, like, some magistrates are, like, a bit, they just look at it and they're just shaking their heads. And then they wonder why other people who have committed a lot more serious crimes are released on bail.
I must say, you know? so does the public. I've just got to take a quick...
Yeah. So, I mean, I've had one where first time before the courts was remanded twice, and they couldn't prove exceptional circumstances. And when it went back to the magistrate was wondering, how is it that this person is in remand without any sort of criminal history? And I had to explain, it's because of the bail laws. It's not because of the person themselves. It's because the bail laws state that they need exceptional circumstances, which the person simply did not have.
We always like to send the lawyer away with to do a bit of homework and come back to us next week. So we keep the... And we have had a question. You were talking before about bail and all that. and you all, you almost tripped up on what the question we were going to send you away with. But anyway, the question's been asked of us to ask of you, and I'm sure you'll be the person who gives the answers next month. But plea deals, we're hearing more and more about plea deals, and in fact, I heard one today. I think it was. Might have been in the paper I read, because I knew this question was coming up, where they said they were still negotiating with the police.
I've read that.
Righto. So
I guess... Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Righto. I guess the question we want to come back next month is, first of all, why are plea deals done? Because if you've committed a crime, you've committed a crime. Now, it may be the evidence not strong. I don't know. That's what we'd like to know. Why are they done in the first place? Who initiates them? Is it the defence attorney or the police? Because I couldn't imagine the police going saying our case is a bit rocky. And under what conditions are they done? I mean, can anybody do a plea deal, or is there a level of crime where after that they say no? Like if it was murder, although we have heard of the murder ones being plea deal down to manslaughter, so. Could you get whoever's coming back next month to tell us about plea deals, how they're done, why they're done, and under what conditions?
Yeah. I mean, I could easily cover this now, but I'll wait until the next person.
Unfortunately, apart from everything else, I've got 30 seconds until I've got to be gone. So I've got a bit of news. But, yeah, I think that'd be fascinating, and I'm sure you'll be the person who tells whether it's you come back or the other one, that'll be the answer. But we'd really love you to do that. Ilaria, unfortunately, time is really ticking on. I've got about 10 seconds to go. So
that's okay.
Thank you very, very much for coming today. We always enjoy this segment with our legal people, and we look forward to seeing somebody same time next month.
Thank you for having us.
No worries. Thank you very much.